Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Lambeau Field will be the site of Sunday afternoon's Packers-Bengals showdown, a 3:25 p.m. Central Time kickoff. And in our final show of the week, previewing the game, as we usually do, we try to kick it off with keys to victory. So when you look at this one, what do you see as the issues of greatest importance to the Green Bay Packers?
I think it's pass rush, Mike. You can't really use the barometer of Atlanta in terms of judging how a pass rush produces just based on how quickly Matt Ryan gets the ball out. But I think specifically against Andy Dalton in this offensive front, it's going to be really important. The Packers know they're not going to have Nick Perry in this game, dealing with that broken hand, broken finger, whatever it is, that forced him to have surgery. So that means that Ahmad Brooks, who was actually down last week as he was still going through the concussion protocol, is going to probably be up in this game, and he's probably going to be playing a lot based on what Mike McCarthy said at his Friday press conference. So who is Ahmad Brooks? Well, he's one of the most steady, consistent 3-4 pass rushers in the NFL over the past number of years. So him and Clay Matthews now working together, we've seen this in the past. We saw this with Julius Peppers, with Mike Neal, different guys having to step up next to Matthews over the past few seasons. Brooks is the next guy, and he's also, if you go on his track record here, 11 years in, but he's been really consistent and really durable throughout his career.
Yeah, this is a guy who knows what it means to play outside linebacker in this type of scheme. There's no question about that. And even as you mentioned, it's tough to gauge a pass rush against the Falcons offense because of Matt Ryan's release and just the way that offense gets the ball out of the quarterback's hands so quickly. But that being said, the Packers did have 3 sacks in that game, and then we saw, obviously, the pressure on Russell Wilson in week one and what that meant to the Packers defense as well. And maybe if there was anything that was the best sign for the Packers defense last week in what overall was a rough game against the Falcons, it was Clay Matthews getting 1.5 sacks.
It was, and the Packers are going to need him. They're going to need to rely on his versatility, his leadership, and really count on him to be the player that they've known him to be over the last 7-8 seasons now. He's healthy. Everything's been on the up and up in that regard. He had a little bit of a hiccup during the preseason, worked through that. So for them to be able to get him going the way they did against Atlanta, as we talked about earlier this week, Dom Capers really pointed that out as one of the big positives to come out of that performance against the Falcons. He played over 90% of the snaps, a credit to Nick Perry, also had a heavy workload despite evidently having that injury early in that contest.
Yeah.
So they still have Kyler Fackrell. Chris Odom is obviously in the plans too, as he's transitioning into the Packers defense after being a waiver claim during final cuts. But let's be honest, if you don't have Mike Daniels, if you don't have Nick Perry, two of the most biggest difference makers in this defense, you need Clay Matthews to be that guy. And based on what he did against the Falcons, I think he's ready to fill that spot if he needs to.
Yeah, there's no question about that. When I look at this game in thinking about the keys to victory, and I said this in our insider inbox, and I'll probably say it, on our final thoughts video and everything, I just think this game is about the Packers, and it's about the Packers playing like the Packers. That's how you win this game. And what I mean by that is when the Packers are at their best, they're stopping the run, they're winning the turnover battle, and they're making more big plays than the opponent. To me, that's Mike McCarthy football. That's Mike McCarthy's formula for consistent success. So, and we all know about turnovers and big plays and stuff. That's kind of the obvious. And I know we just talked about pass rush, but with regards to stopping the run, I look at that as so critical in this game because with Andy Dalton struggling the way he is at quarterback with Cincinnati, they've made a change at offensive coordinator now. To me, there is no better way to give a struggling quarterback a foundation to try to get an offense going than to get a running game behind him. And the Bengals have 3 running backs here, Joe Mixon, the rookie, Gio Bernard, a fast, elusive type of running back, and then Jeremy Hill, who's kind of the, another veteran guy in there. They have 3 different running backs they can turn to here, and I think Cincinnati's going to come in here and try to really pound the football.
Well, and it took until Friday's episode, Mike, but the Spofford Let's Be Real moment of the week is that when you look at the moves that the Bengals made, specifically this offseason, it's tailored around trying to make their offense more explosive, being able to get Ross involved there, working him with, A.J. Green. Tyler Eifert's had some injury issues at tight end, but certainly when he's at the top of his game, which we'll have to see what his availability is for this weekend, but can be a difference maker, a Pro Bowl-type tight end, and really a three-headed monster at running back that they've been forging. They've had difficulties getting that going early, and I think if you go back and look at why defenses have been successful against Cincinnati to this point of the season, it's because they haven't been able to get that running game established. It's made more third and long situations. It's made Andy Dalton had to maybe press a little bit more than he would have otherwise. You keep those short and sweet, I think you can do exactly different type of teams, but I think you can also have the success you had against Seattle against the Bengals if you can curtail that run.
Yeah, and if my suspicion is right, and Mike McCarthy somewhat confirmed it on Thursday, he believes the Bengals are going to come into Lambeau Field and try to run the ball as well. I think Joe Mixon becomes a huge part of their offense. Now, I know there's a lot of controversy about his background in the draft and where he'd be drafted and who would take him. Put all that aside for a moment. Joe Mixon is a powerful running back, and an incredibly good complement from a skill set and physicality standpoint to Gio Bernard, who is a completely different type of running back. So I'm really interested to see just how much the Bengals can, you know, will dedicate themselves to the run. Obviously, the score of the game and what the Packers do offensively may dictate that as well. You never know how these games are going to go, but I think they're coming in here with the idea of running the football.
You raise a great argument, and that's when a team is struggling, when they're having a hard time getting their offense going, what is the main tendencies you see from those squads? They find a running back, they stick to that running back, and they feed them. So even though they have all three, it would not surprise me in the least if they find one of those guys and really run with them on Sunday.
Yeah, I think so too. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, here we are, week three in the NFL season. The Packers are 1-1. Obviously, you don't want another 1-2 start, which the Packers have done and come back from over the last couple of years. But this is one of those games that I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. What do you feel are the implications of this game? What is this game going to tell us about the Packers and where they stand and maybe where things are going heading forward? What are you looking for on Sunday?
I'm looking at the defense specifically. There are a lot of things on paper. We'll have to see who's available and who's suited up on Sunday, but on paper there's a lot of things working against the Packers right now. When you look at Nick Perry, Mike Daniels, even Kentrell Bryce at safety, who's basically a starting player now with how much they're using the nitro, I want to see how this defense responds. When you look at, you know, they played so well, so concise in that opener against Seattle. They go to Atlanta, and a testament to them, there's a lot of teams that the Falcons have been able to get yards off of. And I thought the Packers specifically in the second half were really able to do some positive things. But you can't erase the first half, and you can't erase those, as you mentioned, those 20 to 25 yard plays that really can be crushers to a defense over the course of a series and quarters. So Kenny Clark is a guy, I was talking to him in the locker room on Thursday. Depending on what happens with Mike Daniels, the young defensive lineman, and even a guy like Ricky Jean-Francois, who just came back to the Packers this week after being gone for 1 week, they understand if Mike Daniels doesn't go, it's on them. The run defense, everything you talked about in the last segment, it's up to those young players to step up if they don't have their leader. It's up to maybe a guy like Josh Jones to step up at safety, depending on what the availability is of Bryce. If Devon House doesn't go with that groin injury, that's where a guy like Kevin King needs to step in and really fill his role. There is the potential for the Cincinnati Bengals offense to have success, to score touchdowns, to put up points. But the Packers defense also is in a pretty good spot as well, mentally, when you look at what they brought to the table so far. So I guess what I'm saying in a long-winded sentence is that it's up to the Packers defense to show that they are the defense they were in week one and make sure they can continue to build upon that, even after maybe a setback in Atlanta.
Yeah, I like the point you made about Kenny Clark, because not to say that any game in week three of a young player's second season is some sort of referendum on the kid, but if Mike Daniels is unable to play, and we saw what sort of presence he had in week one against Seattle, Kenny Clark was drafted in the first round, and he was drafted in the first round for a reason, to be that guy who can get in the backfield and disrupt running plays, who can get some of that inside push of the pocket. This could potentially be a really big game for number 97.
We talk so much, Mike, about size and intangibles and all these other athletic measurements that you can have with these early round picks. The thing I like, I've seen from Clark, and I think Kevin King also showed it last week, These guys don't shy away from the big stage.
I would agree.
Clark understands if Daniels isn't there, it is up to him to lead that defensive line, and I think that's an opportunity, if it happens, that he'll embrace.
Yeah, I think the other set of implications we have to look at, and you know me, and we've talked about this, was we don't like to look too far ahead. This is a week-to-week league. Things change every day, every week, with every new matchup. But when you look at this game, the Packers are playing at home. They're back at home after losing on the road last week. Aaron Rodgers said it a week or so ago. When you're trying to look at the big picture, you'd like to win all your home games and then at least split your road games. That gives you a 12-4 record. That puts you in the running for first-round bye, home playoff games, all that kind of stuff. This is just, in my mind, it's a home game the Packers cannot afford to lose. Mm-hmm. This is a home game you need to win. You look back at last season, the Packers lost two of their first five home games to the Cowboys and to the Colts. And in terms of the playoff chase, they were sort of behind the eight ball right from there, because it's so tough to win on the road in this league. I don't care who you're playing. Yeah. When you're playing at home is when you have to take care of business. And to me, this just has the feeling of one of those games for the Packers. They just can't let it get away.
And I wrote about this, too, in our Saturday Insider Inbox. To me, there's three things you have to do to gain home field advantage throughout the playoffs. You win your home games, you win your division games, and you pick up another couple ones along the way. A lot of people, they measure the Packers against Atlanta. I get it. They're the defending NFC champions.
Yep.
That is the standard in terms of how the NFC is. But at the same time, every week is a week-to-week league.
Yep.
If you take care of those three things, winning at home, winning in your division, and then picking up another couple wins along the way, that's ultimately which is what gives you those one or two seeds.
Yeah, and this is two home games in a span of 5 days here for the Packers with the upcoming Thursday night game against the Bears. It's two teams that at this stage of the season, they have not gotten themselves right in the win column. And the Packers can't let them get healthy, get on the right track from the win-loss perspective at Lambeau Field. They just can't allow it.
Got to take care of business. And that's, I'm sure, a message that Mike McCarthy and these coaches are really hammering through this week. Whatever happened in Atlanta, all that matters is what happens at Lambeau Field now over the next week.
Yeah, I would agree with you. With that, we're going to throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here. Wes Hodkowitz all the way over there. Wes, we touched on a couple of milestones that are at stake in this game earlier in the week. I think it's worth revisiting them briefly just to keep everyone updated. One is that Aaron Rodgers is trying to beat the Cincinnati Bengals for the first time in his career, and the Cincinnati Bengals are the last team of the other 31 in the NFL that Rodgers has not beaten. Interestingly, I had written about this 4 years ago when the Bengals game rolled around, and it was also in week three mm-hmm. that year. At that time, Rodgers had four teams left that he needed to beat. And if he had beaten the Bengals in 13, he would have potentially knocked off all the rest of the teams by 2015, because then he beat the Dolphins right. and the Patriots in 2014. He beat the Chiefs in 2015. But the loss to the Bengals in 2013 has left them out there now over this four-year span. Here we are in 2017. I know it's just kind of a goofy statistical thing that at the end of the day, I don't really know how much it means. But I think it would be kind of neat to see him do it, don't you?
Absolutely, especially because if he doesn't, then we're waiting another four years,
unless there's a meeting in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because I don't think we're counting any play or preseason matchups. But regardless of that, I think it is a cool honor. They throw out a lot of those like quarterback win stats. I don't really buy into them too much. Kind of like I really don't buy into pitching wins either, because there's just so many different things that go into that.
Yeah,
you need to pitch well and you need to play well as a quarterback. But at the same time, when you actually, it's a testament to a career, it's a testament to longevity, and more than anything, it's a testament to production, to not only beat a team, but put yourself in a position and put your team in a position to win those contests, especially against these uncommon opponents that you're only going to see every so often. So for Rodgers, I think he said it kind of tongue-in-cheek this week, as we talked about. You know, he's been a few times where he's beaten the Packers too along the way.
Yeah.
But I think for everybody involved, it would be a cool honor if it ends up happening for him. And certainly, I think more than anything, the Packers just want to get that second win. So if that comes along with it, great.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other milestone that's lingering out there is Clay Matthews. currently a half sack behind Kabir Bajaj-Biamila's 74.5 career sacks as a Green Bay Packer, which sits atop the list, atop the all-time franchise list since sacks became an official NFL statistic in 1982. We talked before, Matthew's got a sack and a half last week, so he's now at 74 in his career. And he talked on Thursday in the locker room about, you know, he didn't really have a whole lot to say about the record, but it's kind of like, okay, yeah, I'd like to get this and then maybe shoot for 100, you know. And Mike McCarthy said as well, this is just one milestone for Matthews. He doesn't think that this is somehow a signal of the end being near, that there's still potentially a lot in front of this guy.
Yeah, you know, you have the quarterback position on offense, and that's a spot that if you can adapt your game, you can play in the league for a long time. I think pass rusher is very similar to that. Even in a 3-4 system and the type of linebacker that Matthews is, I think there is an upside there for him if he can stay healthy to play in this league for a while. But it was interesting to listen to him talk, and obviously you wrote about it. He has a pretty good memory, too. I mean, we always talk about Aaron Rodgers, but he still remembers his first sack of Carson Palmer, which was, as it turns out, against the Bengals
at Lambeau Field.
Right. Yeah. So it would be interesting for it to, you know, kind of come full circle if he breaks the record on Sunday. But as he mentioned, I mean, there's bigger goals at hand. And certainly the fact that Reggie White didn't play here his entire career enables him to be in a situation now to be the all-time leading sack leader for the Packers. But still, a very needed accomplishment for him whenever that happens to happen.
Yeah, that sack of Carson Palmer in week 2, I believe it was, of Matthews' rookie year in 2009. That was his first. He had double-digit sacks as a rookie. He had double-digit sacks in 4 of his first 6 seasons. Those sack numbers have trailed off the last couple of years due to injuries and a lot of time at inside linebacker and things like that. But you know, maybe this is another one of those years that Matthews puts up the big numbers. But before you go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of a little sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz there. And Wes, as is customary, our final segment of the week, we'll take a look around the NFL and what week 3 has to offer. And we might as well start with that Thursday night game. Quite a shootout there on the West Coast.
It was, Mike. And I actually thought of you as I was watching this game when the San Francisco 49ers, they get the onside kick back. It's 41-39. There's still time for a rally. 2nd and 10. It appears like Brian Hoyer is able to connect the receiver, pick up the first down. Nope. Offensive pass interference call by Jeff Triplett's crew. Changes the course of the football game.
It's always Jeff Triplett's crew.
The moment it happened, I was like, 1, I think that's a terrible call. And 2, somewhere, if the Brewer game wasn't going on, Mike Spofford would be beside himself. Other than that, Mike,
I was beside myself with the Brewers as well, but that's a conversation for another day.
Thursday Night Football takes a lot of heat sometimes for the quality of football. The Los Angeles Rams and San Francisco 49ers came to play Thursday night. I think Jared Goff, another player that's taken a lot of heat during his rookie season, has looked great so far. Sammy Watkins, it's really interesting to see what Sean McVay is building there with the Rams. You know what they have defensively. Aaron Donald was a beast again, like he always is. Wade Phillips is drawing up schemes to get after the quarterback, but it's kind of, in a way, it was sort of the island of misfit toys a little bit with the Rams when you look at how Watkins' career went. They bring in Woods, but Todd Gurley's seen a little bit of a resurgence this year. I think the Rams are going to be really fun to watch, and kudos to Kyle Shanahan for getting the 49ers to play. They're 0-3. They're off to a slow start in the category of wins and losses.
Yeah.
But he's getting a lot of work out of that offense. I was impressed with what I saw.
Well, these last two games, the 49ers have lost really, really close, tough ball games. So, but you're right, Shanahan's getting things turned in the right direction. When we look at the rest of week three, two games jump out at me, and not just because they involve NFC North teams, but just for the NFC picture in general. You've got Atlanta at Detroit, a pair of 2-0 teams there. Talk about a big early season game here. And then you've also got Tampa Bay at Minnesota.
Yep.
The Vikings looking like maybe Sam Bradford comes back. The Buccaneers coming off of their one game so far this year where they completely dominated the Chicago Bears. So I think, you know, these are some games with pretty significant implications for early in the year.
Yeah, I just want to know what the Packers have to do to get the Falcons at Lambeau. I know that's all in the calculus and how they figure out the schedule, but I mean, the Lions being able to welcome the Falcons into Ford Field as opposed to traveling down to Mercedes-Benz Stadium is a big difference. But whatever the case may be, that's going to be a great matchup. Unfortunately, probably won't get a chance to watch it as we're preparing for our game on Sunday. But that being said, seeing how Matthew Stafford deals with that pressure from the Falcons defense, that speed, I was really impressed with them again. And then certainly the offense goes without saying. Minnesota, really interested to see. I mean, we talked about the Packers defense and trying to figure out, you know, if they're week one, week two, what direction they're taking. I think Minnesota's defense has the tools. Their offense is the question mark. If Sam Bradford's back, is he able to get them turned back in the right direction? Because last week it was not pretty.
Yeah, I think maybe the biggest thing we'll find out from those two games, at least in my mind, is just how good is the Detroit Lions defense?
Right.
This is, I mean, yes, they get the Falcons at home, but it's indoors, it's on turf, it's the type of situation and surface that this explosive Falcons offense is used to, and I'm really curious to see, because as we all know, when Detroit's defense is good is when they are a legitimate playoff contender, because Matthew Stafford can score points. We all know that, and I think this is a significant test for that Detroit defense.
Yeah, credit to Jim Caldwell. I mean, they get those guys playing. They've been off to a fast start again this year, and see if they can keep it up now against the Falcons.
All right, sounds good. But with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.